The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
From the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, November 17, 1997. Reporting by Dave Meltzer. Hart and McMahon started a very amicable conversation, with the pressure finally off and the decision for Hart to leave having been made. He again suggested that Michaels win the title in Montreal, and what will go down as perhaps the ultimate irony, said they could do a screwjob ending to steal the title from him, and that the next night on Raw, McMahon suggested the two get into a mock argument where Hart would punch him, blaming him for the screwjob. McMahon even suggested to hardway him, which is give him a hard punch, that would either open him up or at least give him a noticeable black eye to make it look legit.
Total Engagement with Matt Coon presents, Was the Montreal Screwjob a Work? Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon, brought to you on the MLW Radio Network and powered by WrestleZone.com, the world's most read wrestling news website. Today we're going to do a very special episode on the Montreal Screwjob. Why the Montreal Screwjob, you ask? Well, Viceland is doing a series, as many of you know, called Dark Side of the Ring, and the day that the show drops, our show drops, is Wednesday, and the same night there is going to be an episode on the Montreal Screwjob, and it's already controversial. Dave Meltzer has come out and said that parts of it are false and pushing a false narrative, and there's always disagreements about who was there, who knew what happened in the fight, a lot of conflicting accounts. So what I wanted to do initially was to do a show on the Montreal Screwjob and just tell you what we know and who said what. But the more I got into it, the more curious I got about a certain question. And that question is, why so many wrestlers on the record and people in the business off the record I've talked to think that it's not on the up and up, that what we think happened isn't what happened? And of course, leading to the larger question, was the Montreal Screwjob a work? And by that we mean, was Bret Hart in on it? Now, this kind of talk is usually fodder for conspiracy theorists. Now, there's a couple reasons that I don't buy into conspiracy theories. One is, people always look for simple solutions for complex problems. And a lot of times, a fantastical type conspiracy theory really feeds our need for a simple explanation and also kind of satisfies our curiosity for things that we don't know. And the second one is, in a lot of these conspiracy theories that people believe, there has to be a large group of people keeping the same secret for a long time with nobody cracking. And we know, in any world, especially the wrestling world, that seems unlikely. That being said, if there is a conspiracy, it's only two people: Vince McMahon and Bret Hart. And I said if, so you can save your hate tweets for somebody else, because all I'm doing is presenting facts and asking questions. And I think there's some compelling stuff here. I think that a reasonable person might think there's something else going on here. So we're going to present the facts. We're going to ask questions. We're going to talk about Montreal, get you ready for Dark Side of the Ring, and ask the question, was this all a work?
On Total Engagement with Matt Coon.
The Road Dogg, Jesse James, and Billy Gunn.
What are your guys' memories of Survivor Series 97?
What did we do?
That was all our work.
Oh, that.
You know, you could
act. Oh, when the spin and the fake.
Yeah, I don't believe all that. I'm sorry. Maybe it was true, maybe it wasn't. Vince, I didn't bite. You didn't catch me.
To get us started, what was the Montreal Psych? You know what it is. You're a wrestling fan. You've heard about it a million times. You heard about it on Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. You've heard Vince Russo talk about it. You've heard everybody involved. Bret Hart, I think, wrote 7 chapters on it. You've heard about a lot. If you want a good, thorough kind of collating of all the information in a really well-written article, go to ProWrestlingStories.com. The guy does a great job over there. Of course, back issues of The Torch or The Observer, or any other resources, just Google it. You'll find out all about it. Before we get to the couple reasons I think people kind of sleep on or ignore or maybe haven't thought of why Bret and Vince might have been in it together, I want to go over some of the more commonly used reasons why people think that it was a work. I'm going to head over to whatculture.com. Got to meet Simon Miller over the Bullet Club block party, and I enjoy the work they do over there. And they have a good little list we're going to go off of, and we're either going to kind of discount them or maybe put a pin in them till later. But these are the reasons that the people who believe this theory, the first reason that What Culture says is that Vince McMahon legally could not have screwed Bret Hart due to creative control clause in Bret's contract, explaining that it wouldn't even be a thing because Bret had creative control. I think that's not a good reason. Let's discount that, and I will tell you why. Because of the fact that, you know, the entire movie and everything, Wrestling with Shadows and everything we read about in The Observer talked about them going back and forth and Bret nixing ideas. So that creative control was definitely being used. Number nine reason, Bret and Vince are old school kayfabe. Bret did one last job for the company he loves because he felt bad about taking the WCW money. Now, I'm not sure that's a reason, but I think we'll put a pin in that. I think it could go to motivation when you think about the whole, if Bret was in on it, that these two guys were loyal to each other and they wanted each other to be successful. The number three reason, according to whatculture.com, as to why they think there's 10 reasons the Montreal Screwjob was the biggest work ever. Why was Vince McMahon at ringside that night? Now, that is a great question. I guess the reason given was to make sure that shit went down the way it was supposed to go down. But if you think about it, Vince McMahon could have been at ringside as the commentator in his regular job doing that. It was a weird kind of move for a guy known to get so mad that people quit when people mention his name at the Hall of Fame, and yet bringing that attention to himself at the side of the ring. It goes to the purpose of creating a focal point in Vince McMahon at a time where he didn't necessarily want to be a focal point. And he was always very careful about that. Of course, now things have changed, but it still always has a purpose. And why would he be out there if it didn't have a purpose? Number four on the list is too many conflicting accounts. And we're definitely going to get into that later, especially in regards to the fight between Bret Hart or the punch between Bret Hart and Vince McMahon. For instance, who came up with the finish? There are people that say that Pat Patterson obviously came up with the finish, that he was part of a meeting. There's other people that say he wasn't there. Bruce Pritchard unequivocally states Pat did not know. Russo said he came up with the finish. Triple H is given credit for the finish by Shawn Michaels. And by the finish, we mean the way the match was going to end. There is no doubting there are a lot of conflicting accounts by different people, and I'm sure that will be in evidence if you watch The Dark Side of the Ring. So the next reason given is one that I've heard a lot from fans, which is that everybody benefited, whether it be Stone Cold Steve Austin having the space to grow as a huge star, or Shawn Michaels getting the title, and Vince McMahon becoming a big heel, and Bret Hart being sympathetic and going WCW to make a ton of money. I think that's too wide a net and too big a scheme. I don't think, if it were to happen, let's say it did, and I'm not saying it did, but if it did, it probably was centered around money. It was probably centered around Vince wanting to save money and Bret wanting to make money and then figuring out they had to work together to do it. Now, if it happened, that would be the genesis of it. And all the other stuff were coincidental, correlative things that happened as a result. For instance, Vince McMahon did not want to be a heel. Vince McMahon was upset, actually, and mystified, according to all sources, that people did not receive him sympathetically in the wake of the Bret Hart incident, and turned into the heel as kind of an adaptation to go with the flow of what the crowd wanted. Of course, Shawn Michaels was, by all accounts, again, not someone that was really concerned with the big picture stuff. He was kind of living day by day in the moment and tough to work with, according to pretty much everybody at the time. Of course, Steve Austin did become a big star, and Bret Hart leaving did create that space. But again, although Vince might have been thinking, wow, this would give room for somebody, I don't know if that was the motivation more than money. Of course, I don't think any of these other people would have been in on it with Vince and Bret. So the next one has some teeth. It's the Hart family and the McMahon family history. Of course, they've worked together for a long time, and Bret and Vince did have a very close working relationship for a long time. Stu was able to pull some strings once in a while and get Jim the Anvil Neidhart back on the roster, so loyalty might be implied there. I don't think that's good enough to put as a reason, but it might have some teeth. Now, here's another reason that's kind of two, and I'm going to go yes and no. Number one, the backstage punch was not filmed, and Vince's black eye looked like makeup. This is grouped together as one reason. Vince's eye was black. I researched this. I can't believe I researched it. But there are pictures that exist outside of the Raw backdrop which show Vince's black eye, and it is swollen. I think they put makeup on it to cover it up a little bit. I don't know if they exposed it as much as they could have when Vince did the interview, but also there are shots of him, you can Google them, where you can see the black, it's clearly a black eye. As far as not being filmed, it's a little weird, right? The camera goes in there, Brett waves off the camera. The next shot you see is Vince walking, staggering down the hallway, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. And what's also weird is there's a little muttering you can hear, and I turn it up, and it's a voice clearly saying, don't look into the camera. And it might have been Shane. It sounded like Brett, but it might have been Shane, but it was someone who was mic'd, so that was strange. So I guess if you're someone who likes conspiracies or you're a little paranoid, you might say, aha, and that's a smoking gun. But it is a little bit of a nugget and is a little strange. The next reason given on whatculture.com, I was like, yeah, when I read the title, but I was like, nah, when I saw the reason, which was there's no way Vince would put himself in that position to begin with. And they're talking about how there's so many guys that Vince could have put in place as world champion. He was held over a barrel by Brett being in the position that he was, and he's too smart to be that way. Perhaps that's the case. I don't know if that's a reasonable justification to believe that it was a work. I think if it did happen, it was a last resort of Brett and Vince wanting to work together, realizing financially they couldn't make it work. And then all the scenarios took place, supposedly about when he's going to drop it and all that stuff. I don't think, whether it was a work or not, that Vince didn't intend on keeping Brett. The second to last reason given on this list of 10 of reasons the Montreal Screwjob was the biggest work ever is Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer's full account and friendship with Brett. Now, I think there's two sides of this, and those two sides don't necessarily connect, even though in this article it makes it seem like one is related to the other. The first is that Brett has a friendship with Dave Meltzer. Brett goes as far as to thank Dave Meltzer in his book, and Dave Meltzer has really great reports on it. It is pretty evident and pretty well known that Brett was a source for Meltzer for all of this. To say that then they're both working together or that Meltzer's in on it, for a couple reasons that makes no sense at all. Number one, Dave Meltzer takes himself very seriously. The very fact that I'm doing this show on this subject, probably with him, is just another reason to go, well, Matt Coons, he doesn't know. You know, he takes himself seriously. I think it's highly, highly, highly unlikely that Meltzer was, quote unquote, working for the WWE, because he takes himself seriously as a journalist. And the second reason is that since when is Meltzer trying to help the WWE? He gets criticized for being tough on them or being slanted against them. I'm not saying any of that's true, but it's definitely not a situation where he's like, let me help the WWE. So let's go ahead and throw that out there. But it is worth mentioning that if in fact it was a work, that means Dave Meltzer was worked. If it did happen, then he was worked. So if you don't believe Dave Meltzer could have been worked by Brett, then you might want to just say it could have never happened. But if you think it's possible, listen on. And the last reason given on the What Culture list of why it was a work was Wrestling with Shadows, the film that was filmed during this entire time, which it's kind of weird. It's kind of coincidental. And for a lot of people, it's the final piece of the puzzle. But it might just be a coincidence that there was a movie going on at the same time being filmed backstage, which was highly unusual, and it caught moments really that served well to perpetuate the story that people think that everybody involved wanted to perpetuate. If it's just Brett and Vince, it kind of serves the same purpose. So outside of this crazy coincidence, there's a couple reasons why it doesn't fit, and one reason is that Vince tried to get the movie to be not released. That's how the story goes, and that WCW offered to put the money up to get the film released, and then Vince finally agreed, because I guess he wanted to have some control over it. And then also, this was agreed to a long time before these instances happened, so the timing was coincidental, you know, serendipitous, maybe, for some. In this list, it goes on to say things like, it just happened to find this, you know, scene of Triple H talking to Julie, which is Brett's wife, which is fantastic, by the way, if you watch it, and if you believe that Triple H knows or doesn't know, and that Julie's talking to him, he's such a professional already, and then once she keeps going at him, he just says, I have nothing more to say, and she's kind of shut down. You can see the future professional Triple H at work, but that doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think they were working the camera crew. I don't think they were working the edit. I think if we're going to take the leap and say this did happen, it was something that was going on that they took advantage of to maximize the situation.
From YouTube, Jerry the King Lawler.
I wouldn't be surprised if Vince and Brett were in on it. I just try to think back on different reactions and facial expressions and what took place after the match, and you know, it all looked a little funny to me.
Right.
I mean, even the part of Brett hitting Vince afterwards. Hey, and you know what? If it was all a work, it was great.
Compelling evidence to suggest it was a work. Well, that was dramatic. But let's get a little bit more dramatic and see if there's any compelling evidence, either stuff that maybe I've dug up or other stuff that people have said that might make the case that it was a work. The first one for me is this contract situation with Brett. It doesn't make a whole bunch of sense to me. It's incongruous to what we've heard about Vince and his contracts. The fact that he would rescind a contract. The fact that he would show weakness and say that he didn't have money. The fact that he offered him this big contract, suddenly took it away, and was willing to coordinate with Brett in the narrative that is presented to get money out of WCW. None of that seems right to me. It all seems very strange. It's never really lined up for me. It doesn't seem in character with Vince. And what's also peculiar about that is the fact that the reasons given that Brett says, even in the movie, that Vince says they're in financial peril, and that's the reason given. But Meltzer goes on to report that the interesting thing about all this for now, from all accounts, Titan Sports had turned the financial corner and is operating in the black. In other words, during the same period that McMahon brought Hart back and was paying him the huge money, and the period he told him he was going to breach his contract because he felt he wasn't worth the money, Titan's financial situation had greatly improved, not gotten worse. And the fact is, that's weird, because according to Meltzer, the company could afford his salary the day of the Montreal incident a whole lot more than it could have during the time it made the deal, which adds another layer of mystery and question to the whole contract and financial thing. Another bit of compelling evidence that really can't be ignored is wrestlers talking about interactions with Brett about the incident. For instance, here's a story the late Chris Kanyon told about an interaction with Brett a couple years later.
And I didn't want to insult Brett and say, hey, I think you're lying, it's a work. So after the day after, you know, we drove, the next day at the house show, I really wanted to ask him, man. I figured this was my one opportunity, but I didn't want to be a dick. So I just said, if Vince had presented this to you as an angle months before it actually happened, would you have done it? Because everybody turned out all right. Vince became a huge heel. You got to leave without really losing the strap. Sean gets the strap. Everybody worked out.
Right.
And all, he didn't say yes and no. He went, and walked away. But I'm telling you, what I fully believe and what I believe he meant is, yes, you nailed it, but don't tell nobody.
And he's not the only one with an interesting story to tell. Here's Sean X-Pac Waltman talking about a different interaction with Bret Hart about the same subject from Kayfabe Commentaries.
I'm like, Bret, how could you have not saw that coming a million miles away? I know you too well.
Right.
He goes, Earl told me, and I believed Earl. It's hard for me to swallow that.
So there you have one interaction where it seems like Brett may have kind of admitted it to somebody, and another one where someone didn't buy what Brett was selling. And that leads to another piece of compelling evidence for me, which is how many different wrestlers believe that it was a work. You know, just reading from Wikipedia, it says Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Bam Bam Bigelow, Road Dogg, George Steele, George Animal Steele, Chris Kanyon, Steve Corino, Tony Marmaluke, because, I mean, you know, just incredible, and Paul Bear and Sonny have gone on record to say they believe that it was a work. And I heard a story from someone who was there a while ago, who was at the show and saw Vince get in his car and seem fine and say goodbye to him that night, and the next day he had the black eye. So, as I said earlier, the black eye was real, but maybe it was applied later. So this is a wrestler I'm talking about, someone that I've met before and had conversations before with about this. And I hadn't talked to him in a while, so I kind of texted him about this. And he told me that, quote, a lot of us thought Brett was in on it because that was a way to save face, to allow him to go to WCW and make money from them. To me, it's weird that so many people in the business think it's a work. And of course, I know a lot of people are saying that's indicative of the nature of the business. The work nature of the business and the history breeds a kind of suspicion at all times that everything's a work. Like Tony Schiavone says, everything's a work. So whether it is or not, you're going to believe it is. And Cornette makes the case that, you know, it's a worked sport that had a shoot that people are trying to convince was a work, but it's really a shoot. And it can be confusing, so some people are just desperate to believe that. There's some merit to that, but at the same time, when you look at the fact that so many wrestlers who know the business and who are sensitive and have a good radar for being worked or not have kind of come to the conclusion that it is a work. Sometimes we've broken some news here on Total Engagement, and if there is some kind of news to be broken, I think it might be this. It's been overlooked, but it's the thing that I read in my radio voice at the beginning of the show and literally in the issue of the Observer that covers the Montreal Screwjob. It is said that it was presented to Hart by McMahon to have a Screwjob type ending and steal the title from him, and then the next night on Raw, they would get into a mock argument where Hart would punch him, blaming him for the screw job. This is someone who has never been really a character other than getting shoved by Bret Hart before. And, you know, McMahon even suggested to hard way him, which, you know, give him a hard punch to make it look legit with a black eye. This is what Meltzer reported. Like, this was something that Vince designed in his head and presented to Bret. And it's what happened. So, I mean, what the actual fuck is a good question, because that's a pretty crazy coincidence. I don't know quite what to do with that, but in a thing we're analyzing where it requires a belief in a lot of coincidences to make this belief happen, which is, it is a work. In this case, you have to really take a big leap and say, wow, what a coincidence. What a crazy happenstance that McMahon designed the very thing that happened and presented it to Brett. Of course, he turned it down, creative control. I think that's a pretty compelling piece of evidence if you believe this stuff. Otherwise, it's a crazy coinkydink. These things I'm calling compelling bits of evidence, it by themselves would probably mean nothing. Together with other factors, and the ones we went over earlier, start to create a possibility, a plausibility maybe. And then when you add in the one thing I think that gets overlooked the most, and it is something that's never made sense to me since it was brought to my attention a couple years ago, and I think the better person to explain it is Kevin Nash. This is off Kayfabe Commentaries, and he gives a reason to me that I don't know if I could impeach in any sense. So let's hear what he has to say.
Anybody that knows Vince McMahon knows that if Vince McMahon doesn't sell 3 years of the federal government up his fucking ass, he doesn't sell a fucking spinal fusion. He didn't sell a double quad injury. He's gonna sell a fucking punch from one of his boys on fucking film? Come on.
That is a pretty great argument, and one I've never yet found the answer to, because anybody who's followed the WWE closely for any amount of time knows that Vince McMahon fashions himself a pretty tough guy, and he doesn't sell ever in real life. He didn't sell the two torn quads at all. He's a tough guy who would wrestle Brock Lesnar, you know, challenge Brock Lesnar to a fight and take finishers from guys in a bar. He is not going to show that he's weak. It's not what he does. But yet, he's staggering through the hallway, dazed and confused, taking a punch and selling it for all it's worth. And he's got that kind of Vince look on his face, if you look closely, that Vince selling look, you know, but he doesn't sell in real life. And according to Kevin Nash, he's always been like that. So that is something that's never connected for me. How can this be the way it went down? Vince getting humbled by one of the boys and selling it in front of everybody backstage and everybody who's going to watch this film. Seems highly unlikely.
If it happened, what happened?
If it happened, this is the way I think it had to have happened. You've got Brett, you've got Vince, you have the contract signed, and Vince looks at his profit and loss statements, and Brett also maybe has a little bit of regret of not taking more money up front. Now, we heard earlier that the company was not in dire straits, but maybe Vince was playing that up a little bit to Brett and maybe taking advantage of Brett's loyalty. At the same time, maybe Brett had a little bit of a buyer's remorse for the WWE contract. They had to both kind of mutually agree to end the contract. That's probably where the work started. And then once it was decided that Brett would have to go back to WCW, I think it was paramount to Brett and McMahon that they appear to Bischoff that they weren't working together. And the best way to do that is to show animosity between them. And that might be a reason why it happened. Because Bischoff's a smart guy. If he had any notion that he was being worked or taken advantage of, or they're working in coordination, I mean, Bischoff's a prideful guy too. He would have been like, F that, no matter how much he wanted Bret Hart. And not only would Brett and Vince have to keep the appearance of animosity between them to Bischoff, I think the incentive could be that they did the same thing for the other wrestlers because of the contract situation. If Vince and Brett were working together to send Brett to WCW, why wouldn't some other wrestlers come? And so they had to build a little bit of a smokescreen by creating this appearance of animosity. And maybe there's a handshake agreement that Brett comes back in a few years and they agree to do this big smokescreen with the finish. And maybe it would result in Brett leaving, you know, kind of sympathetic. And at the same time, Vince McMahon also being sympathetic, because we heard earlier that's what he really wanted. Of course, other people would be pissed off that they were working together to get rid of a WWE contract to send someone down to WCW. Now, for this to work and for them to feel, for this to work and for them to fool Bischoff and for them to fool the guys and kind of keep what they're doing secret, they come up with this idea that Brett doesn't want to give the belt up. And then the suggestions come in. Russo said he suggested it. Triple H has been credited with suggesting it. It wasn't a hard thing to do. Brett and Vince in tandem working on this and then staging the fight. There's a few different stories about the fight that have come up. You know, even Brett says that he hit him on the chin, and Bruce Pritchard, I think, said he hit him in the eye. And I think Dave Meltzer reported that he got hit in the temple. Once again, these kind of conflicts of stories are what is really giving way to the Montreal is a work theory. It provides the room for that theory to exist. But they worked that fight. Maybe he punched him there. Maybe he acted like he punched him there. Maybe Shane punched him later. But he certainly wasn't knocked out. And him walking down the hallway was an act. That has to be part of it. That has to be part of the story that builds them both up as sympathetic people for their sympathetic people. Because maybe Vince did want to get on screen. Maybe Vince started to get that hunger then and saw, well, this will probably get me out there a little bit and I'll be a sympathetic figure. At the same time, Brett takes his momentum as he sees it into WCW, but most importantly is free of that contract and is free to go where he wants to get the huge Bischoff money in WCW. No one else could be let in on it. It would just have to be Brett and Vince. That's it. a handshake agreement between two guys in a room that have known each other for a very long time and were old school and knew that if they promised a secret to each other, it would never be told.
Did it happen?
I guess the easy answer is only Brett and Vince know. And that's the fact either way, only Brett and Vince know. Of course, Meltzer thinks he knows. You know, he did all this great reporting on it and he printed thousands of words. He had a lot of sources. But if those guys didn't know and if Brett was working him, then it could have happened. That's the biggest obstacle for me to overcome because I think that Meltzer probably would have sniffed it out. The movie is a crazy coincidence. The fact that Vince McMahon doesn't sell anything but sold that punch is another crazy coincidence. And the fact that Meltzer reported that Vince pitched the idea that ended up becoming very similar to Montreal, including a punch and a black eye, is extremely coincidental. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's hard to just call somebody a liar. And it's definitely difficult to emphatically state that something that we all believe is not true and there's a greater truth out there. At the same time, I gotta say that if you believe Montreal was a work, there's no way someone could call you crazy or someone could marginalize you. So don't come at me because, first of all, I didn't say it. Second of all, if you do believe it, there's enough here where no one can really call you a whack job or that stupid or think about it or don't be a mark or whatever the hell people are going to say. There is enough here to make it plausible. And then when you look at the people that have said they thought it was a work, you're going to say, Kevin Nash, I have a better read on the business than you do. Sean Waltman, I have a better read on the business than you do. Road Dogg, Billy Gunn. That being said, it is a little far-fetched. But isn't the truth a little far-fetched too? I don't know. Something to think about. And I hope you enjoyed this short episode, but very intensive. It was a lot of work. Episode of Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. Please subscribe to the show if you're listening for the first time. You never know what you're going to get on Total Engagement, but what you will get is a fan like you who somehow found himself in this position where he has a podcast on the MLW Radio Network and gets to interview great people and put out crazy theories and people actually hear it. Please reach out on Twitter at Matt Kuhn Music or at Matt Kuhn TE for the Total Engagement Twitter page. Some weeks we have interviews, some weeks we have bits, some weeks we have current wrestling, some weeks we don't. And this week we had an investigative look into whether it was plausible that Montreal was a work. And I'm not so sure anyone, after listening to this, can say no. We will see you next week on Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn.
Stops.